What's up, everybody? My name is Lee. Some of you guys might know me as Intuition, and you are tuned in to Kinda Neat. Thank you for tuning in, as always. Follow me on Twitter, at It's Intuition. Follow my man, Ben Shim, on the boards, making the shit sound buttery. I am Database, base with two S's. Follow us as a unit, at Kinda Neat. YouTube.com/That's Kinda Neat, where you're going to see Danny Seth, our guest today, performing Darling Danny. Very beautiful ode to his stepmother. Quite a sad song, I must say. Thank you guys for tuning in so much to the YouTube channel. We broke 36,000 subscribers and just 7 million views today, which is so crazy. And we're about to have, I think, like 25 of our videos are going to be over 100,000. It's just insane. Like, so appreciative. Thank you so much for all the artists that we've had on the show that trust us to put their music out the way that we do. You know, we have a lot of fun. We like it, and it's good. Facebook.com/kindaneat. Download that podcast app. Go to your app store on your iPhone or your Android and download the podcast app. Subscribe by searching Kinda Neat. Click the little icon. It's the little KN. And just subscribe, subscribe, subscribe. Leave a 5-star rating. Leave a comment. Tell us who you want to see on the show. Most of the time when you guys tell me like who you want to see on the show, chances are I've already reached out. It's funny, I was thinking about it today, like some of the names that we've had flake on us or like that I've had booked in the calendar and then something comes up last minute where they can't be on the show, you guys would be astounded and disappointed and like, oh, wow, you almost did that. That's good. But, you know, sometimes things just don't work out and sometimes they do. It's all serendipity. Man, it's been a minute since we did this. The last one we did was Kamasi, and such great response from that one. I was really happy with how the video came out. It's probably one of my favorite things that we've recorded. It was really dope. Some really interesting places picked it up and posted it, and we were happy about that. But it's probably been 3 weeks since I've been in the studio to do one, and I've been just so busy. Work has finally been picking up. It was a slow, like I told you guys, if you've been tuning in the whole year, the beginning of the year got off to a slow start. Now, busy as shit. I'll tell you what, it's very busy. What I can say is that I have a show coming up at the Troubadour. This is the announcement, I guess. I guess I'm doing this. I guess I'm going to announce it. We just locked in our opening acts tonight, and I'm very excited about them. So it's going to be me and Mark headlining for my birthday at the Troubadour again, because last time was one of my favorite shows, and I want to do it even bigger and even better this time. And so, yeah, we're playing the Troubadour on Thursday, July 9th. It's an all-ages show. I think tickets are $12 in advance, $15 at the door. I would say get them in advance. Make sure you get them in advance because our opening acts are veritable stars in their own right and they sell a lot of tickets too. So I'm not somebody like I'm not an egotistical person about headlining. I don't really care. In my eyes, all of these people are like co-headliners. And so for direct support, we have a young lady named Neomza. And Neomza is someone who I think is going to be a big star. She's has a beautiful smoky voice, and like you guys know how I like my soul singers. I like them with smoky voices and I like them with a lot of soul, and she has that, and she's also a great songwriter. You guys may or may not have heard of her yet, but she has a strong following. She's dope, and I think if you haven't heard of her yet, you're gonna like her, and she's eventually gonna do an episode. We'll just leave it at that. For the opening act, we have a fucking Kinda Neat favorite. He's one of the last videos that like really hit hard. That's Michael Christmas. And Michael Christmas is going to be the opening act. And I know that you guys are going to love him too. So I'm really happy about the show, the lineup. I think the lineup is awesome. And so I'm not going to put out a flyer for another few days. So if you guys are listening to this episode, you're the first ones to hear about it. Good job. Congrats. So please, if you are listening and you live in the Los Angeles area, come out and watch the show at the Troubadour, July 9th. It's going to be my second annual birthday party turn up. I shouldn't say this. I shouldn't put it out there because I feel like sometimes when you put things out there, you almost kind of jinx them. Like you feel like you've already accomplished it. But I fucking want my birthday shows to eventually turn into a goddamn festival. I want it to just be the biggest thing. I don't know if it will, but who knows? So yeah, like I said, I've been busy. We've been traveling around a lot. Dom and I went to Charlotte, North Carolina, and we shot Dale Earnhardt Jr., who's like the man when it comes to NASCAR. I've never seen a NASCAR race, but apparently it is very popular. My uncle, who lives in outside of Philadelphia, was like, I love Dale Earnhardt Jr. You got to send pictures with him and yada, yada. And so I ended up getting him a t-shirt signed, and I took the best picture with Dale Earnhardt Jr. for him ever, where I have my shirt off and an American flag do-rag on, and we're shooting a paintball or like holding paintball guns. Like, it was ridiculous. I'm an idiot on Instagram, but it's funny. And then I just went to Portland last week, and in Portland, I have the story that I want to tell you guys that is like pretty ridiculous on a lot of levels. It was probably one of the most awkward things that's happened to me, if not ever, definitely in recent memory. It was a very awkward moment for me. There were a lot of levels of awkwardness, and it was awkward on both sides. But we're at this restaurant in Portland called St. Irving Street. I had had a long day. So what happened is, like, we went on a three-day camping road trip shooting some pro snowboarder dudes, which was really cool because I got into photography because I wanted to be a professional snowboard photographer. Like, that's what I wanted to do because I grew up snowboarding and I loved it very much. And it was one of the things that, like, really helped me tap into my creativity, I think. So it was a bit of a dream come true to, like, go ride Mount Hood with, like, a bunch of pro dudes. Like, we were riding with Mark McMorris, who's like a bronze medalist in the Olympics, and Bodie Merrill, who was a snowboarder of the year last year, and Zach Hale and Aaron Bittner, just cool dudes. And it was fun. It was a lot of fun. We went around Oregon for 3 days camping and chilling, and they hopped in the ocean and surfed in Pacific City, which is crazy because it looked really fucking cold there. But the last day when we're going back to Portland to fly out, my iPhone had died right before we get to town. And so I'm like all panicking trying to get a new iPhone because they sold me a lemon, basically. I just got a 6 Plus like 6 weeks ago, and I already had to take it into the shop once, and they did a factory reset, and then now it died again. I knew that they should have just replaced it from jump, and so they replaced it for me. Then I run back to the hotel and realize that, fuck, like, my beard looks like shit right now. Like, I've been camping for 3 days. I look like a homeless person. I smell like a homeless person. And I ran out of beard oil. And I was like, you know what? I got to find a barber because I'm not going to have time when I get back to LA because I'm running all around this week too. And so I was like, I walked like 10 blocks and I went and got a beard trim. Now, the shit looks very sleek, I got to say. It makes my face look very sharp and beautiful. So then I run back, take a shower, and we go to this place, St. Irving's, and we're eating. And it's like a kind of a fancy restaurant. And I preface all that to say that I'm kind of tired at this point, and I start to drink some cocktails. I have like an old fashioned, and then I start drinking my second old fashioned, and I'm eating some fancy squid ink pasta shit. I don't know. It was tasty. It had shrimp and chorizo in it. I'm down. And so as I'm eating and I'm about a cocktail and a half in, a dude walks by that I am pretty fucking positive I recognize, and I look at him and he looks at me. And I kind of like squint my eyebrows like, wait, what the fuck? And he looks at me like he's kind of smirking like, oh, yeah, you know who I am. And he kind of starts to make a beeline towards our table. And it dawns on me, it's this guy I know from Washington, D.C. named Brian, who we've shot with before. And I'm like, what the fuck are you doing here, man? I'm like, yo, what's up, Brian? Or like, you know, and I stand up, I shake his hand, like heavy bro handshake, to where it's that one where you like, you shake the hand and then you push the hand down and hug each other. And I gave him a full on hug, like, yeah, dude, I can't believe you're here. What are you doing here? The only thing that looked weird about Brian is that his hair was permed. Brian is an African-American gentleman. He's a black dude. Last time we saw him, he just had like just a kind of conservative haircut, you know, like high and tight, nice lineup. And now Brian, I'm seeing him, and he has his hair permed and kind of slicked back and shaved up on the side. Like, think like the Macklemore haircut, or like kind of a conservative Danny Brown haircut, right? I'm like, yo, what's up, man? What are you doing? And he's like, oh, you know, nothing. I'm just here eating, you know? And I said, well, how long are you in town? And he goes, oh, what do you mean? And I said, you know, like, what are you doing out here from D.C.? He goes, oh, no, I live in Portland. And I said, oh, you live in Portland now? You moved? And he's like, nah, what do you mean? And before that even happened, I tell Dom, like, yo, Dom, it's Brian. It's Two Saints from Instagram. It's Brian, you know? And Dom looks up and goes, oh, shit. He's like, damn, you got a new haircut? I thought you were Danny Brown. At which point I found out later that Dom actually did think it was Danny Brown. Like, Dom thought that basically Danny Brown and I recognized each other. He's like, yo, I just thought that was like some real hip hop shit. Like, Danny Brown was like, oh, I know that fool. That's intuition. And you guys were like showing love to each other, which is like crazy because he would have no idea who I was and that would not have happened. But that is what Dom thought it was. So I'm telling Dom that it's Brian from DC, and Dom's looking at the gal that we're with at the table like, this fool's crazy. That's not Brian. And I'm thinking, this is Brian. He just has a new haircut, right? And so I say, oh, how long are you out here? And he goes, I don't know what you mean. And I said, from DC, what are you doing out here? And he goes, no, I live in Portland. I was just here doing a TED talk and now I'm having dinner. And I say, you live in Portland? You moved here? And he goes, no. And I go, wait, what the fuck's going on here? I go, you're Brian, right? And he goes, no, I'm Gregory. And I said, well, then how the fuck do I know you? Like, why did we just hug it out? I totally thought that I knew you. And now I'm so confused because you looked at me as though you recognized me. And I looked at you as if I recognized you. And that shit was all very strange. And he goes, well, no, man, I'm Gregory from Top Chef, which is very funny to me because I'm like, I went, oh, fuck. I was so embarrassed at this point because I stopped myself and I go, holy fuck. I'm so stupid. Like, that's why I recognized you. I thought you were my friend Brian from DC because you guys look a lot alike. And this isn't on some like, oh, everyone that I've told this story to has been like, oh, that's racist, fool. Like, oh, all black people look alike. No, all black people do not look alike to me. That's a retarded thing to say. But Brian and Gregory look a lot of fucking like. They have the same glasses. They have the same facial structure. They're the same height and they have the same facial hair. The only thing that was different was a haircut. And I just thought like, oh, but that's the thing is that Brian is a fashionable dude. So like him having that haircut wouldn't have been like out of left field to me. It made sense. And so he goes, no, I'm Gregory from Top Chef. And I go, fuck, I'm actually a huge Top Chef fan. And now I'm realizing that's why I recognize you, because I was rooting for you last season, which was not bullshit. Because here's the thing. I have this cousin, Brianna. She lives out in Vegas. Shout out to cousin Brianna. Kind of one of the things that keeps us in contact with each other at this point is that we're both Top Chef fanatics. We've never missed an episode, basically. So we'll text each other like, oh, are you watching this season? Are you caught up? Like, who are you rooting for? Et cetera, et cetera. Like, when shit happens, I'm like, oh, I can't believe they eliminated that person. Or thank God this person got eliminated. I love Top Chef. And so the funny thing is, Brianna and I from jump were like, yo, this fucking season is going to suck because Gregory is just going to run away with it. He ended up taking second place, if I remember correctly, but he did great. And he was the early favorite for sure. And so we were like, yo, this season's boring and Gregory's going to win. So we were kind of like rooting for him from jump. And so he says, oh, no, I'm Gregory from Top Chef. And I'm like, motherfucker, how embarrassing. And so he walks off and goes to the bathroom, and then we don't see him again, thankfully, because seeing him again would have been mad embarrassing. And at that point, Dom and our other friend McKenna that we were with were just fucking laughing at me like, damn, you're an idiot. You put your foot in your mouth, and like Dom's looking at me all crazy like, yeah, I knew that wasn't Brian, and I was just watching you make a fucking fool out of yourself. And I was like, I thought it was weird because I'm like, yo, why doesn't Brian recognize Dominic? Like, is it because he has a hat on, or like they just didn't see each other? Like, I didn't understand what was going on. I'm like, why aren't you guys hugging it out the way I just hugged it out? And he's like, but you know what? As much as you put your foot in your mouth, you didn't look as crazy as that dude did, because that dude saw that you recognized him and he came over to the table thinking like you must have wanted an autograph. Like he was like, oh yeah, you're damn right that you recognize me. I'm fucking Gregory from Top Chef, you know, which is kind of what he was doing. And so then, like I said, come to find out, Dom thought it was Danny Brown the whole time. So the whole funny thing is like, it was just a whole folly of errors. And it was like, there was levels to everyone fucking up the reason that everybody was trying to talk to each other. And so this whole time I'm thinking it's some dude from DC that I knew. And he's thinking, oh, I'm just a Top Chef fanatic, which he kind of was right. But that's not why I was trying to talk to him. So yeah, it was just very awkward. I will never forget that situation and how crazy it felt, because I just wanted to crawl in a hole. Like, it was just so fucking weird afterwards. And that's my funny story for the week. What else? Oh, today is my dad's birthday. June 1st is my dad's birthday. And as you guys know, I always talk about it. It's probably obnoxious at this point, but he has Alzheimer's. I've seen a bunch of documentaries and like mini clips about, you know, how people react to music when they have Alzheimer's. And because apparently the music section of your brain that remembers songs is like one of the last things to go. So I started kind of doing an experiment, just seeing like if somebody would hook me up, because I was looking for an old iPod Shuffle, because I know they're like pieces of shit and no one wants them anymore. And I start looking on Craigslist, and they're only $20 on Craigslist, right? But in the LA area, all of them were like in Glendale or far out places, because I live on the west side. And I was like, I don't want to spend $20 in gas just to go pick up a $20 item. So I just tweet out like, yo, does anybody have an old iPod Shuffle that I could have? Because I know they're not worth anything. And if you just don't want it, I'll pay for the shipping or whatever, and I'll PayPal you, you know? And so my homie Piff Tannen, shout out to Piff Tannen, we've known each other through the internet roughly, like, he actually is from DC, coincidentally, but we've known each other on the internet through internet forums for like 10 years now, maybe more. So shout out to him. He hit me up and was like, yo, man, I have an old iPod Shuffle. He's like, you don't have to pay for the shipping. I'll just ship it to you. It's whatever. And so I told him what my plans were, because my plan was to make it very easy for my dad to listen to music, because unfortunately, he recently wandered off. And if you guys are familiar at all with Alzheimer's, that's a bad sign. When people start wandering off, it's not good. My mom is getting the kitchen redone right now back home, and so there's a lot of loud noise going on. And so she went upstairs for a little bit, and she's kind of his safety net. And so she's not around. He gets kind of freaked out. And I think that combined with the loud noise, he just kind of wandered off and escaped. And my mom's like freaking out. And so she and the contractor both hop in their cars and they drive separate ways down our like little street and try to find him. And he was like 3/4 of a mile away, headed towards the highway almost. And my mom says, what, like, where were you? What were you doing? Why'd you wander off? I got very scared. And he said, well, you know, I was walking out towards the dike and, I lost the dog. He ran off for a bit, but you know, I got him back. And so it's okay. Now, he was saying this and making this story up, but he was walking in the opposite direction of the dike and the dog was in the house the whole time. So, you know, like that was his coping mechanism, was to like make a story, which I find very interesting and, you know, kind of sad. And so anyhow, my mom tells me that story kind of in distress. And I said, well, I'm going to do this thing and make him a mix of all his favorite artists and favorite songs on an iPod Shuffle, because it's only one button. And I feel like it'll be easy for him to kind of just listen to music when he wants to listen to music, because he can no longer get through reading a book. He can still read words, but I don't think he can piece them together while reading a book. And it's getting to the point now where TV shows are hard for him to follow along to. So he's kind of running out of things slowly that he can kind of waste time with. But like I said, music is something that they don't lose. There's like this old clip of a dude who's like in his 90s, who's like gone completely lethargic, who's essentially catatonic for most of the day, like sitting there, not saying anything, not reacting to anyone, not listening to words. And they put headphones on him and he lights up and they're playing music from his teen years, like big band stuff, Dizzy Gillespie and stuff. And he lights up and starts talking and telling stories about his youth, and everyone like in the room is like teary eyed and shit. And so I found that very inspiring. So I put like a bunch of music on this iPod Shuffle. I put Van Morrison, I put CCR on there, I put Bob Dylan, Tom Petty, Neil Young, Carlos Santana, the old shit, not the shit with Matchbox 20, fuck that, Bob Seger, Rolling Stones, The Beatles, Muddy Waters, Lead Belly, like he loves the blues. I put some Otis Redding, some Sam Cooke, because I noticed that he sings along with that stuff when it comes on in my car. You know, I put the classics on there. B.B. King had just died the day that I was doing it, and so I put some B.B. King on there because I know he likes Thriller's Gone and Riding with the King with Eric Clapton. I put Eric Clapton on there a bunch. So anyways, I make this mix, and it fits about 120 songs on the Gigabyte iPod Shuffle, and I send that to my mom, and I send some headphones, like some shout out to Skull Candy. They give me free headphones. So I got some Skull Candy headphones and sent them to my mom. And right when I got back from Portland, she sent me a text that said, "Dad is using the iPod Shuffle headphones you sent as I write. He's singing and humming and says he likes it. What a great and thoughtful gift." And I said, "That's really cool. Like, update me if he comments on it anymore." And so a little bit later, she goes, "He's singing 'Have You Ever Seen the Rain' out loud." And he looked at me and said, "Thanks." And I said, "For what?" And he pointed to the headphones. And I told him it was from you. And he got a big smile on his face and said, "Oh." And now he's singing like a Rolling Stone. And I said, "Oh, I'm kind of teary-eyed off that." And she said, "Me too. Seriously, he seems very happy." And so apparently every night since then, she's been putting the headphones on. She'll say, "Hey, Barry, do you want to listen to some music?" And I'll go, "Yeah." Like, without even thinking, like, "Yeah." He puts on the headphones and he's like very astounded that it's all coming from that little tiny device. And he sings and hums. And at one point when Oye Como Va came on, that Carlos Santana song, he goes, Karen, listen." And he like opens one of the headphone sides and she says, "What?" And he says, listen. And she leans in and goes, "Oh yeah, Santana." And he goes, "Yeah, Santana." And then he just puts the headphones back on and keeps listening and humming and singing. And so I thought that was cool. Seems like my little experiment kind of worked out. And so I'm hoping that that will entertain him for some years to come. And it's good because it doesn't, my whole idea behind the shuffle was like, it doesn't have any choice. Like there's no, hey, do you want to listen to this? It's just like you press play and whatever comes on, comes on. And I think that's kind of what he needs. So sorry, that was a long intro, but a lot of stuff has been happening and life's good. And I'm happiest when I'm busy. And if you listen to the podcast frequently, you know that I'm the happiest when I'm the busiest. And I've been real busy, and so I've been real happy. That being said, we got Danny Seth on the podcast today. Danny Seth is a rapper, and Danny Seth is from England, or he's from London, just outside of London in a small place called Bushy. And Danny Seth is a white dude. And so those are the three things. I hate going like, oh, he's a white rapper from London. But, you know, when people say, what's the elevator pitch? That's what people would say. And so Danny Seth, he was our guest today. Very nice dude, well-spoken, interesting to talk to. First time we've had a British person on the show, so that's dope. I feel like as Americans, when we talk to British people, well, first and foremost, we always think they're smarter than us because it sounds very refined. And the second thing is, it's very hard to not want to do a British accent the whole time you're talking to them. Like, I find myself trying to fight that off the whole time. But yeah, he was cool, man, and I like this, and he did a great song afterwards. Back and forth from LA, has some good stories, and I think you guys will enjoy this. So without further ado, here is my conversation with Danny Seth. You're from London.
I am.
How's that? What's it like? So here's the thing. I'm from a weird place, and people are always like, what's it like? And I have my like standard go through the motions of things that people might not know. What's yours?
I'm on the outskirts of London. I'm from a little town called Bushy, just next to Watford.
Bushy?
Yeah, it's okay. Called Bushy.
Yeah, yeah. Pause again. No, I'm just kidding.
literally. You know, I grew up in Central and like around, you know, East and all around that. So I've seen different sides of London. You know, I love it in the summer. I don't like bad weather. It makes me sad and upset.
That's what I always say. My hometown. It's great to visit, not the place to live.
Love it, yeah. Love London. It'll always be the place in my heart. But, you know, when you step foot in Cali and you wake up to sunshine.
Something about this place.
The women, the weed, and the weather. Even though I don't smoke anymore, but...
You quit smoking?
Yeah.
Cigarettes and weed?
Oh, cigarettes 4 years nearly now.
4 years. Yeah. Good job. Yeah. I'm at a year and 2 months.
Damn, congratulations. Yeah, we're out here. Year's the hardest part.
The first year was tough. Wow. But, actually, the first like 6 weeks were the hardest.
I think there's not a day that goes past where I don't miss a cigarette. Like someone could smoke next to me and I'll be like, give it to me. I'll never get over it.
Me too. I still have the habit to want to bum. Yeah.
Yeah.
it's terrible.
Terrible.
Yeah. When did you start smoking? How old are you?
15, maybe.
Yeah, me too.
And I have terrible asthma too. So I think it was about 4 years ago. I was just in bed and I was like, it was before I went to sleep. I was like, you know what? I can't. And I actually, it's a lie. I believe in the universe or God, whatever is up there. And I think
the higher power.
And I think what made me stop, I was like, you know what? Whoever's up there, let's make an agreement. If I stop smoking, you're going to help my career out.
There you go.
So every time I go to grab a cigarette, it's like, I don't want to fuck my career up. No, I don't want to fuck my career.
Don't want to jinx it.
Yeah, I don't want to jinx it.
That's great.
Yeah, yeah.
When did you find out you had asthma?
I've had asthma my whole life since I was like a baby.
What's the first time having an asthma attack like?
terrible. I had pneumonia when I was 9, so I nearly died when I was 9. So that shit was fucking scary as fuck. And I think that kind of fucked up my lungs and my whole... But... You know, being young and growing up in a scene, you know, you can't not smoke. Like, I got asthma, I'm not going to smoke. Shit, smoke is cool as fuck. I'm not going to be left out for that.
Yeah, it's funny because, like, my dad was a smoker. Mm. All the male influences in my life were smokers. And I went, I'm never going to smoke. It's so gross. And then the first time I had a cigarette, I'm like, this shit is for me. I love it.
it's lit.
It was terrible.
Super
and
lit.
I became such an expert at, like, hiding cigarette smell from my parents and shit.
I feel you. I had my systems.
Yeah. Just outside of London and Bushy. What's Bushy about? Like, what's the socioeconomic status of that place?
It's pretty like out there. It's like, it's kind of, you know, very quiet, small town. You know, northwest London is quite, there's a quite big Jewish population. I'm Jewish.
Okay.
So like all around there's a lot of Jewish people. But Bushy is kind of like you know, it's next to a place called Watford, which I grew up and I partied in as lots. It's very diverse. Like, it's on the outskirts. So it's kind of get a bit of everything. You get a taste of London. You get a taste of the outside of London. It's dope. I love it. You know, no matter where I go in life, I always go back and buy a home in Bushy and chill. My dad lives on a small island in Spain called Mallorca. So that's where I kind of...
Oh yeah, I've heard that future. Place is pretty tight, huh?
That's tight as well.
Yeah, we have. How often do you visit there?
Maybe once a year.
Yeah,
I go see him.
It gets crazy, or what?
It's pretty crazy. It's the island next to Ibiza, so it's pretty lit.
What's he do out there?
he chills.
He just chills.
He's chilling right now. Shout out my dad.
Where's your family come from?
We're from London.
Like generations in London.
We are Ashkenazi, so that means kind of family from like Russia's, and that's where they all came from, you know, after the war. So my actual second name was Belferman. My name is Danny Seth Bell, but it was Belferman, and then my grandpa changed it because it was too, you know, Jewish.
Right. Bell. So did you grow up going to temple and stuff like that?
My mom's super relaxed, man. She never forces anything on me. And, you know, my dad, you know, it's nice. I think I only go once a year just out of respect. My own, no one makes it. I go out of respect because I feel like the festival and we pass, I feel like, you know what, maybe I've had a shitty year. Let me fast for a day and just
reflect on things.
Be thankful how lucky I am to be where I am and this and that, and people who are not as fortunate as I am.
What's school like as a kid in England? Do I refer to it as Great Britain or England?
Well, England's massive, so probably London.
Just call it London. Okay.
Because London's, you know, the capital.
Yeah, absolutely.
I went to 7 different schools.
Really? Why were you guys moving so much?
I was a little shit when I was younger.
Really?
Yeah, I went to a bunch of schools. Because until I was about 13, we had no money.
Mm.
And then my dad married my old stepmother, who was like my mother to me, like super, like the nicest woman in the world. And she was really wealthy. So she took me out of, you know, public school. She wanted me to go to private school. And I was a little bit rugged when I was like 13, 14. I thought I was, you know, a bad boy and my pants low and this and that. So
yeah.
So when she started to put me into these private schools, I was like, fuck this, what the fuck is, I won't be with all my boys, I don't want to be wearing a fucking uniform and shit like this. So I ran away from two of them.
From private schools? Were they boarding schools? Like you're away from home?
Well, one of them was, and I was just, that was just a no-go. It was lunch break. I remember I was like 14, it was lunch break, and I'd plotted my route home because I only lived like 20-minute walk away. So I was just like, well, when they're not looking, I'm going to hop the fence, I'm going to go. And I did it. And then there was the school kind of shut down for the day trying to find me. And then my mom had to drink because my real mom, you know, I love, that's my backbone. She kind of is just like, she knows me better than anyone. She knows I'm not making a fuss because I'm a brat. I'm not making a fuss because I'm, you know, I'm not happy.
Yeah.
And she just wanted me to be happy. So I went to a bunch of schools.
Where did you go when you ran away?
I went home.
Oh, to her house.
Yeah,
to mom's house.
And she was like, because she knew, you know, she didn't.
Did she let you hide out for a while?
Yeah, she didn't fuck with all that private school stuff. Yeah. She was just like, yeah, you can come home. I'm not tripping.
So. Right. You got brothers and sisters?
Halves and steps. More steps.
So you're kind of, you're the only biological sibling.
Yeah.
So how'd your parents meet?
Well, my dad's had 4 wives.
Oh, so he's out here.
He's out here.
Is that why he's in Mallorca? You find like a nice Spanish broad?
Yeah.
Nice. That's fantastic.
Well, my mom was, I think my mom was like 21 and my dad was like 40.
Oh.
Yeah. It was lit.
So your dad's probably a little bit like me, it sounds like. All you 20-year-old
I think it was different. I think it was different back then, maybe.
Right. Well, different in that you couldn't slide in the DMs.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It was a lot harder.
Yeah.
He was winning, for sure.
Yeah, so he had wives before your mom? Or?
Yeah, he had one wife before my mom.
And he already had some kids before you came along?
Yeah, so I've got two older halves.
Are you closer than any of them?
Yeah, I'm closer to my two older half sisters. There's a big gap. They're like 40 now, so they've got kids too.
So they're almost like aunties or something.
Yeah, so I've got, but I'm, you know, I'm an uncle a few times now, so...
Right.
That's cool. But, you know, I've got another baby half-sister from one of my mum's other marriages who's like, that's not my baby sister. She's like my real sister. I brought her up.
Nice. So, yeah. So how long did your folks try to make it work when you were born?
Not long. I don't even remember.
They were just together. Never together. Who'd you stay with mostly then, mom or dad?
It would be crazy because my dad would be hustling a lot of different jobs. He was a bit of a hustler. He tried to do a lot of different things. So my dad always tried to make me happy. Like, he'd always want the best for me and this and that. So I would live with mama. I lived with my grandparents for a long time.
Where they stayed in Bushy,
yeah,
too?
No, oh. In a town, little town next to it called Stanmore.
Okay.
They're my backbone. They're still both alive today. My grandpa, God bless him, is 86. He was a butcher, so he's a big boy. He kind of like never seen the dude be ill. I've never fought. He's like, he's a warrior. So
nice.
Those two are like my backbone. They're proper inspiration to me. I still sometimes stay there whenever I'm stressed. I'm going.
And that's mom's parents or
mom's
dad's
parents? Yeah. Dad's parents I never met.
Okay.
Because they passed away, but apparently they're amazing people.
Nice.
So I've lived everywhere, man. I've lived in different countries. I lived in Israel for a year. I lived in, I went to university for a year. I'm a bit of a I don't want to say runaway, but I don't like to be confined.
You like to move.
Yeah, I like to move. And, I think I learned that from my pops and people like that.
I always wonder where that comes from. Because, my dad was the same way. He liked to move. He got away from his family at a young age and kind of moved to the other side of the country. And then I ended up doing the same thing. And I never really thought of that until I was an adult. I was like, oh, I fucking did the same thing as my dad.
Exactly.
Yeah. So you feel yourself getting antsy when you stay places?
Yeah.
A little restless?
Yeah, restless. And I get uninspired really quickly, too.
Yeah.
I think inspiration comes in weird places and forms. And to find myself as well, like, I feel like I need to move.
How early were you aware of the fact that you're, like, a creative?
Well, it took me a while. I used to be a dancer, not like in choreography, but I used to love Michael Jackson. He was like my idol.
I saw that you got the bad tattoo. Yeah, I noticed that was the first thing I noticed. Oh, fuck yeah, Michael Jackson. I'm down.
That's like my idol.
I keep Thriller on the iPod.
Always.
Yeah.
And I remember my mom bought me a video. It was like about to make the history tour. With the golden, he was on the golden statue in the front.
Yeah.
And I just used to memorize the dances. I was just like, yo, this dude's crazy. And then I start, I would just always be dancing. Like 12, like 11.
Oh, man, if you two would have been around back then, you would have gone viral.
Yes. Yeah. Literally.
Yeah.
And if he was still around, I'd love to collab with something, Michael.
I'm sure he would have loved to collab too. Oh, shit, that's terrible.
Yeah, terrible. Yeah. R.I.P.
So you're a dancer. That's funny. That's how I got into music too. I used to love dancing.
Yeah.
I was never a choreographed dancer either.
No, that's what I mean.
I would go enter like dance competitions at my youth center though. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Same. I would go to the local fucking parties. I would be like 13, like this big, but still be let in, and then do the circle and get in. I loved it. Like, I would got videos like I'm gonna release in the future, like me dancing my sister's wedding. I was like 11 in a circle, like crazy.
Yeah,
stuff.
They have videos of me doing that at like 4 or 5 at my uncle. Wedding. Yeah.
It gives you that feeling, and I guess I didn't realize, because of where I was from, that I could reciprocate that energy into something else. I kind of thought, oh, this is cool. But when I was 16, I started to DJ. I grew up in the dubstep era, and the birth of it. I was there for the Casper and Rusko record. Like, I saw everything. I grew up going to Fabric when I was 16, doing 100 old pills and fucking loads of gear and a ket and a meth and all. Not crystal meth.
Yeah.
There was a drug in England called methadrone, which got kind of big.
What's that about?
It was like a legal drug. It was a plant fertilizer, and they were selling it. And there was a website called phoneforDrone.com.
Uh-huh.
And because it was legal, I'll tell you what it is, go and do it. So
what is it?
It was like a cross between coke and ecstasy.
Okay. So you're like, super positive, but also very turned.
Yeah, you'd be awake for like 5 days. People, kids were like awake for like 5-6 days.
Oh my God. That does sound like meth kind of though.
Yeah, it was, but it was legal. So it was this whole gap and everyone was fucking doing it.
Were kids dying from it or anything?
No, I don't think anyone was dying from it. I just think they couldn't control the sale of it. So I believe that's why they fucking made it legal,
Yeah.
So
crazy. So when did you start experimenting with drugs? How old? 16?
Well, I was smoking since I was like 13 because my pups and my stepmother, I said, they were big smokers in the house.
You just like used to steal cigs?
I'm talking about dro too.
Oh,
my stepmom's dog walker, who was like our best family friend. She would just always have fucking loads of gear, and I'd come in and they'd be smoking, and I would steal some, and they wouldn't let them know, and then they found out, and then I was just like, they were cool with it, so I would just have.
Wait, so when you say gear, though, break it down, sorry, English slang.
Well,
because when I think of gear, I think of like train spotting, and I think of heroin.
Yeah, heroin. No. Okay. It's like, usually when I say gear, I actually mean blow.
Okay.
But this time, when I say gear, I mean like a
just
puff,
weed.
Puff. Yeah,
yeah,
weed.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
So yeah.
But okay. Then, but so then, you start experimenting with weed very early.
Yeah. And then I had, so when I was 16, 17, I used to take pills and all of that. But on my 18th birthday, I went with my ex-girlfriend and seven of my best friends to Amsterdam.
Oh shit.
And it was the weekend that mushrooms were going to be made illegal. So it was the last time to do it in Amsterdam legal.
That's funny. I still remember that, like in the news and shit. Like all of a sudden there was a loophole where it was like legal for a day or something.
Yeah, it was. So I went there for a drum and bass festival, which I was really excited for. And I was like, yo, I'm going to do everything. I'm going to do pills, get weirder, but I'm not doing mushrooms.
All right.
Walk out of the rave, fucked up my face on a pill. I look at my best friend. I'm like, let's go do mushrooms.
Yeah. So, that was your first time trying it?
So, yeah.
How was it?
I'll tell you, it was the most disturbing thing that's ever happened to me in my life.
Have you ever done them again?
No.
Dude, I always have bad trips on mushrooms.
No.
I kept trying.
Yeah. How can you keep trying?
I kept trying because I was like, I had such good experiences on acid that I like loved acid. And so I was like, I got to get this mushroom shit right. Like, I got to be in the right headspace. And it was terrible every time.
I remember every second of the 10-hour trip to this day.
Let's hear some of it. What are the worst parts?
I can tell. Well, I'll tell you step by.
Oh, yeah. Go ahead.
Oh, my God. Okay. So I've gone to the store with my best friend at the time. And I was like, you know what? I don't want the ones that make me giggle. I want the ones that fucking shit me up. I want the ones that fucking do me. So
take me on a fucking ride.
He's built me these ones with these massive stalks, fat head. They look gross. He's like, bro, don't fry them. Don't do anything to them. You got to eat them raw. It will give you the best trip. Don't eat it with fizzy drinks. Blah, blah, blah. I'm like, oh my God, the fuck can I eat? How am I meant to eat this? So go back up to my hotel room. It's me and my best friend in one room and the six of them are in the other room. So we're like, fuck it, let's do it. I'm eating it. Nothing's happening. And then me and him just start punching each other. Like just play fine, punching each other. I'm like, ha-ha. And then I hit him in the face.
Oh, shit.
And he was like, what the fuck are you doing? I was like, whoa, sorry, bro. Like, I didn't mean that. I ran into the other room where my other six friends are, and I'm about to tell them, like, yo, I'm tripping, and I burst out laughing.
Yeah.
So they're all thinking I'm having a great time, but every time I try and talk, I burst out laughing.
Like, you just can't control your voice.
So I couldn't control any. So I was like, you know what, I've got to calm down. Let me go sit on the couch with my girl, let her, you know, feel me out, see what's up. So I'm laying on the bed, face down, and she's rubbing the back of my neck, and my head is in the pillow, and I'm tripping. I put my head up and I look down and there's blood on the pillow. So I go to my girlfriend. I'm like, babe, can you get me a tissue? I'm having a nosebleed.
Mm-hmm.
She's like, you're not having a nosebleed. So I go like this. I'm wiping my hands. It's blood all over my arms and shit. I'm like, whoa, I'm freaking. I ran back into the other room. I threw up. I was like, oh my God, this is it. This is over. We're good.
Yeah.
I just needed to throw up
and
I'd be cool. So she grabs me and she puts me into the shower and I'm about to have the shower. And as I grab the handle, it starts melting in my hand and I'm like, oh my God, it's happening again. I'm like, oh fuck.
Yeah.
Long story short, towards the end of the trip, I'm sitting in the bed, I'm looking at the lampshade and I'm just thinking, my parents are going to come and see me in a mental institute in Amsterdam. My life is over. Everything is gone.
Yeah.
And I'm feeling there's a window in the corner, open window. And I'm feeling something pulling me towards the window. Like, you've got to do it. Like, it's either mental institute or you're going out this window.
Oh, my God.
So something's pulling me. And I got to the edge of my bed and my ex-girlfriend came. She touched my fucking leg and I snapped out of it and I burst into tears. What?
And that was after the 10th hour. Like, that was the 10th hour.
And then I said to her, I was like, how long was I like this? And she was like, you ended up going for like 10 hours.
Oh my God.
And I was like, what the fuck?
Wow.
So after that, I stopped doing pills. I stopped doing any hallucinogenics.
Cleaned you up.
cleaned me up. I needed that.
That's funny. My first time doing mushrooms, I was going through like a hallucinogen phase. And so we had done acid a couple times. And my first time on acid, I got arrested. But it was actually awesome. It's a funny story that I've told before in the podcast. Right. But the best part of the trip was getting tested by the cops. Like, it was like amazingly trippy, and they ended up letting us go, and it was fine. But then, and I did it a couple more times, and then I was like, all right, let's try mushrooms. And we do mushrooms, and we're in a car on our way to a party. In the middle of traffic, my friend in the backseat opens the door and just fucking throws up in the middle of a stoplight. Amazing. And I went, fuck this, take me home right now. Like, that just set it off. Like, I was like, I'm having a terrible trip. The cops are definitely gonna come get us. I was like, take me the fuck home. And they're like, dude, you're tripping. I'm like, I know I'm tripping. That's why I want to go the fuck home right now. Yeah. I ran back into my dorm room and I just laid in my bed, like, shivering, watching a clock as the clock just jittered until I fell asleep. It was the worst feeling of anxiety. And I was like, crazy. One of these times I'm gonna get it right. And I never did.
I can't believe you had the balls to try it again, bro.
I'm very persistent. As you can see from our emails and text messages, yes. I'm very persistent. No, I'm like, let's make this happen.
We're here.
Yeah.
Here.
So,
speaking about it gives me the shit. That's bro. It's so crazy. And it's not a day that I don't think about it.
Really?
It's been a long time. I'm talking over five years.
That's not a day. My producer, Mark, he has an acid story that changed his life where somebody meant to put like a drop of acid on his wrist, liquid, and they spilled the whole vial. No. And he was like, I literally thought I died that night. Like, I woke up in a field of wheat. It was like back in the 90s during a rave. He's like, I woke up in a field of wheat looking at the sky in the morning after being blacked out all night. And he's like, I thought I was in heaven. And he's like, I locked myself in my bedroom for 5 days after that. And and that's when I decided that I was going to make beats. And my life has never been the same since.
Crazy.
Right? How crazy.
It is crazy.
A lot of people discover themselves on hallucinogens, I feel like. So
I think it happens for good or bad reasons. I think I discovered myself too. I became appreciative of life.
It was a negative experience that had a positive effect.
Exactly.
That's perfect.
Exactly.
When did you start getting tattooed?
I got my first tattoo. So basically, this is my mistake arm, and this is my good arm.
Yeah.
So this tattoo here is my birthday. And because when I was 16, you could buy cigarettes at 16 in London, but you had to be 17 to drive. So I never had a license. I never had an ID, but I could smoke. So then every time they asked for an ID, I looked so young. They were like, you don't have an ID. So I went with my friend. I was like, fuck it. I'm getting my birthday tattooed on my arm. If anybody asks me a fucking cigarette, I'm like, bro, here is my ID. That's
kind of dope, though. Yeah. I like that. It might be a mistake now, but that's a good origin story.
Yeah, it's a good even though my grandpa's like, looks like a Holocaust tattoo, which I was like, yeah.
That's dark.
Yeah, so I am gonna get it covered. I just don't know with what. Yeah.
Yeah. Did you guys lose any family in the Holocaust?
I believe my grandparents did. So that's a pretty fucking. I mean, I'm a documentary enthusiast. Like, yeah. I watch everything, and to watch, to believe that shit was documented and seen is just
crazy.
It's really crazy, and I pray to God nothing like that ever happens.
The photographs are so haunting,
terrible.
I recently found out my mother's maiden name is Milkovitz, and so we've been doing research on the family, and they always claimed that they were Lutherans, her grandfather. And it turns out that one day when he was drunk, he just told my grandmother, like, you know that we're Jewish. And so, like, that's like new information that's never been revealed to us. And so, yeah, they came from Hungary back in like the late 20s because I feel like they felt it bubbling off, you know, like, because Austria-Hungary got like fucking devastated during that shit too. So, yeah.
It was all, I mean, it's just crazy that something like that happened in this day and age.
Right. I mean, that was like a blink of an eye ago. So, I find it interesting that, like, there's something about dancing as a kid, like, you kind of don't realize it until hindsight, but it kind of proves that you have an inherent rhythm.
I think so.
That now you're obviously using in this career, and that crosses over very easily, you know?
Yeah.
And you can kind of see it in your videos, like, you can move. I don't know, there's like, it's something that some people have and some people don't. Like, it's impossible to clap off beat for people like this, you know what I mean?
No, I feel, as I said, I didn't know how else I could reciprocate that energy of dancing until I fell in love with music again at 16 with the DJing and the mixing and the stuff like that, and then eventually falling into, you know.
Yeah, so what's that like when, because there's a scene bubbling in London at that time, and dubstep was a new, brand new thing, right?
That's crazy.
And so you were right in the epicenter of it.
Yeah.
And how do you start to find out about that scene?
going to I used to go to Fabric Friday every religiously.
What's like, that about? What is that?
Like Friday night was the dubstep night. It would be the chasing state. It's the fucking, you know, even Chase was drum back then. Like, as you're saying, the Jokers, the, you know, the Plasticians, the fucking, you know, Caspers, the Roscoes, all of that. Like, me and my friends, we would just love to fucking rave, man. There's something about the early dub and drum and bass just, you know, I used to love high contrast. Like, all of that was just... It just gave me this feeling. Like, I would travel the country. Like, I went up and down the country to see them play. Like, and you know, I'm really tight with Chase and Stairs now. And still, I say to them, I'm like, bro, you're still my idol. Like, yeah. I still grew up like running down, you know, to the Millennium Center, O2. You know, still, I would stay till 5 a.m. till their sets. It was just a way of life. I think it was something we did in our area, what all of our kids did. We would love to go on the train up there. It would be the experience just to go see these acts. Because rap concerts don't really, you know, happen in, like, grime concerts don't happen in London. They get shut down all the time by the police. So when the DJing and the dubstep came, when they blended the grime and the dubstep together, it was like, fuck. We would have grime artists come out on the fucking dubstep shows and we would get like a 2-for-1.
And then they don't get shut down because they're not on the flyers.
Exactly. Right. So it would be really dope. It was just this beautiful merge of electronic music and rap.
So that before dubstep started cracking off and you're listening to Michael Jackson, what was the gateway between Michael Jackson and dubstep? Did you have
I was a massive hip hop head too. Like, I was massive into the Neptunes, the Clips, kind of like I was that Pharrell kind of sound, that early 2000s.
Lord Willin is like
Lord
one of Willin.
The
that best
was the first
albums.
Album I bought.
I fucking love that album.
That's my favorite album.
Yeah.
Lord Willin and Boy in the Corner by Dizzy Rascal were the first two.
Yeah, Dizzy Rascal is one. That's one of the few. Is that grime or is that garage? What do you call
it? It's grime. Yeah, he's the king.
That's one of the few grime albums that really like crossed over to the U.S. Yeah. And so a lot of popular rappers currently in America definitely give that album credit. Its props. What is it, Trapped in the Corner, Painted in the Corner or something?
Yeah,
what's it
called? Boy in the Corner.
Yeah, that Boy in the Corner, sorry.
It's part of influence for my artwork. Like, I'm sat in the corner too. That's kind of paying homage to, you know, that album. That was a big part of my life.
I'll never forget, I went to like an LP Dizzy Rascal show at El Rey or something, and we watched Dizzy Rascal perform for like a fucking hour and a half with a hoodie on, and he didn't sweat a single drop.
Yeah.
But like, what the fuck? Like, how do you not sweat? I was sweating just standing in the crowd. It was crazy. That guy got good genetics.
Yeah, I think that's something just growing up in a grime wave in a small room, 100 people, you know, you're used to that heat probably. Yeah, so that was probably a big...
So would you try to go to like Dizzy Rascal shows and stuff like that, and they would just get shut down?
They would get shut down.
Every time you say shut down, I'm just like, shut down.
Yeah, shout out Skepta. He's also
that
king.
Song is so lit. And
I still am a massive Skepta fan. Yeah, that was also a big part. But you know, as growing up where I wasn't growing up in a grime environment, so I loved the sound, but I couldn't replicate it because, you know, I'm not going through what they're going through. So
yeah,
I would listen to it.
Did you have friends that like people in London, like there's parts of London that are grimy
this is
as
the
fuck,
yeah this is the thing about like, this is what people don't realize. And I learned this in LA is you've got your good areas and you got your bad areas,
and they're right next to each other.
But like, they're areas, like you're in a good area for a bit and you're in a bad area.
Yeah,
London, you can be in one of the richest roads and the road parallel to it is the blocks. Like, literally, it's like that. It's not segregated. Like, it's literally, it's all... So, you know, loads of my friends grew up in the blocks around us, and shit like that, but it would never stop me. It always never stopped the cultures blending. It was very... You have the mix of the culture. Everyone's from different areas. You know, when we would go out in Watford, it would just be like everyone come together. So you learn a lot musically from that. And it's, you know, as I said, like I loved grime music. I still love grime music. It's a big influence in what I did, but I can never replicate it.
Right.
So I had to kind of find my own balance, like where I love the clips and I love grime. You know, let's kind of create our own, you know, experiences. And
right,
what
it's interesting because I think like now it makes sense that you're coming out here a lot because the sound that you've kind of melded into fits very much into the kind of warehouse underground, like very turnt scene out here with the big 808 drops and stuff like that, you know?
No, for sure.
Yeah, and it just sounds more like, from what I've heard, which is, I'm not like fully educated on your fucking whole discography, but it's like, you know, it sounds like, It sounds like a British dude rapping over Atlanta music.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. I lived in Atlanta for a bit too. So that was a really crazy. I needed to learn. I feel like if I wanna be known out here and I really wanna, you know, fuck with the people, they've gotta, you know, understand their culture. You know, I lived in New York, lived in Atlanta, lived in LA.
So you're a student of the game.
I feel as I said to you before, when I said, you know, I had something that was blowing up which I wasn't happy with and I wasn't ready for.
Yeah, let's not get to that yet, because that is an interesting conversation that I wanna have. But so you're DJing, you're 16, 17, you're in the scene and you're DJing, and how do you start getting booked? And first and foremost, did you have like one friend who was putting you on to everything?
I wasn't like a huge DJ.
Yeah.
I was just DJing for all of my friends, right? It's like everywhere I'd go.
House parties and stuff.
House party. Yeah. We had an online show too, which was pretty crazy.
So you were like a technology adopter.
Yeah. So we, you know, that was kind of, it was our escapism. There was, you know, studios in Watford that we would all go down, like 20 of us, and we'd all spin, and then they'd spit, and, you know, I wasn't spitting, and so it was kind of like I was still learning, and everything was so good. But something about when I was mixing, you know, there was no computers. It was just pure CDs. I was mixing CDs.
CDJs.
I wasn't lucky enough to get vinyls because I couldn't really afford the tapes.
Well, it's an expensive habit
exactly,
to get into.
Exactly, but the CD, I was mixing pure CDs. No computers, no nothing. And just because I loved the music so much, it was just so great to play it. Even though I wasn't playing in front of a big crowd.
How are you finding it? Napster or something? Or like, or just online? Like,
yeah,
we'd find it
online. And I'd know people, like one of my friends was a DJ, and then I got tight when I, you know, everyone knows everyone, so we were cool. And the dude who owned the studio was a big drum and bass DJ, so he'd give us some stuff. But it was kind of like, yeah, it was like, damn, we love this music so much. I don't care if I'm playing in front of five people. Yeah. One of the first raves I did, this is a crazy story, one of the first raves I did, and I recently looked at the flyer 6 months ago. One of my producers, I only worked with two producers. Mm-hmm. One of them was called Zach Nahum, one of them was called MDS. And Zach was always in my area, but we didn't know each other. Mm-hmm. But we were looking at the first show. We were both on the same lineup together, which was really crazy.
That's really funny.
Yeah, we both were doing like dub, drum and bass, and we were both on the same lineup. So we probably fucking were DJing like back to back or after each other. But we just didn't know.
It just wasn't in the cards to meet quite yet.
Yeah, it wasn't.
So interesting. Yeah. So when do you start going like, hey, maybe I could rap? Or, did you write a lot as a kid?
No, I started writing when I was spinning. But where I was from, it kind of wasn't a thing to spit.
Right.
Are you trying to be a spitter? What the fuck, get a job, bro? And I just like, don't be like, DJing was rad enough. Like, don't be going out there. So I kind of, I was writing, but I was also playing it. So I was concentrating on a DJ. And, you know, I did want to go to college, university.
Did you guys have friends that were like the dedicated rappers, and then and then they would come up and rap during your sets and stuff?
Yeah, we had those.
And you know, so they were like,
one of my best friends,
do one
too.
Or the other.
Yeah, so one of my best friends too was a crazy spitter. And it was kind of when I moved away for the first time.
You went to college?
No, I went to live in Israel for 6 months.
Right. So is that like your, rite of passage?
I just went there because I was fucking up on a lot of things and I needed to get away. And there was a special course which a couple of my friends were going on, where it's like you go, you help out in a school, you help out the kids, you go live in like in the ghettos of Israel and you help out the community.
Yeah.
So it was something that I didn't, not going to be honest, I didn't want to do it, but I knew I needed to get away. And the experience now, I'm so thankful and grateful for it. And, you know, it really made me find out who I was and be like, you know, I don't need to listen to if people think I should do this or not. So when I came back from there, I was like, you know what? Kind of want to take this seriously.
Yeah. What was the experience in Israel like? Go deeper. Like, what were you doing on the day-to-day there?
I was working in a school in Bat Yam, which is kind of like a ghetto in Israel. And just seeing how people lived, you know.
Like, was it the level of poverty just kind
like
of astounding?
Like, I would hear gunshots outside my shit the whole time. Like, it was crazy. Like, people don't realize it's that side of Israel too, you know. It still is the Middle East.
Yeah.
You know, just because there's upbeat places in the middle there still.
Well, and that's kind of like a fight that never ends over there.
Exactly.
Yeah?
Yeah. So it was kind of like, it was really, you know, I think I learned more when I went and lived in Jerusalem for my last 3 months. Mm-hmm. So I was in the ghetto in Bat Yam for the first 3 months, and I went to Jerusalem, and there was one night, and I'm not religious, I'm not spiritual. I just, you know, as I said, I like to go places and I like experiences. And there's a Jewish holiday called Yom Kippur, where in Jerusalem, you don't do any, you don't eat, you don't drive, you don't nothing. So I was in some ghetto apartment overlooking the highway, but the highways would be empty on Yom Kippur, and the kids would come and sit in circles and play in the middle of the highway. So you'd be looking at this massive highway and kids, 4-year-old kids on their push bikes and playing, and people playing football in the middle of the highway. So that was kind of
like this crazy juxtaposition.
Crazy. Like, yeah. And everything was calm, and it was, you know, this is like a dystopian, like, you know, everyone had just stopped and just embraced kind of life. Yeah. And, you know,
it probably looked like something out of a fucking post-apocalyptic movie or something.
Exactly. Yeah. And then there would be crowds of people walking because the highway would go to the wall, and everyone would go to the wall. Yeah. So when I did that walk down the highway, and I kind of was just like, damn, this is, you know, life's kind of more than myself. And, you know, as I said, I'm not religious, but I like experiences. I like to get in touch with myself and people. And
You felt like there's something bigger right there.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, that's dope, man. And so you come back from Jerusalem or Israel, and do you fall back into the same crowd, or what do? Do you separate yourself a bit?
My friends, you know, I'm blessed with a great diverse group of friends, all doing very different things. Like, I'm talking like property, accounting, parting planners, promoters, DJ. So there was so many of us, and I kind of remember turning around to my best friend, who's now an actor, who's trying, you know, he was nothing. And then I took, you know, I believe in the secret. I relive my life by the secret.
Right.
So I remember,
which is putting forth positive energy and thoughts, and it'll come back to you or something like that.
Yeah, a bit more in depth but that's kind of the gist.
Right.
And I turned around and said to him, I was like, I just read this book, I just come back from it. So I kind of, you know, that I've always loved, you know, this is what I want to do, and, you know, I think I'm going to do it, and I don't want you to let me give up. I don't want you to not let me try it and then give up. I need you to, you know, be honest with me, this and that. And he's like, you know, I got your back, whatever, doesn't matter. So I kind of took it from there, and went to college for a bit. Didn't really work out. I was just doing loads of
Where'd you go to school for? Was it for a year?
Yeah, it was for, just under a year.
Where'd you go?
Nottingham Trent.
Did you live on campus?
Yeah, I lived on campus. I was just basically boning a lot of bitches and partying and just knowing nothing.
That's kind of what college is for, I guess. The first year, realistically.
Yeah.
Did you graduate high school?
No. I went to, so basically in England you have high school, and then you have college, and then you have university.
Oh, okay.
So there's a college is like the gap, the bridge gap. I had a really dope teacher at my college. You know, this is the college where, bear in mind, I'd been to 7 schools before. This is like the last chance. This is it.
Right.
And my teacher, you know, I wasn't good at any subject, but I did start to do media and film and radio and television studies. And he was super dope. He was also my soccer coach, and I was like the star on the soccer team. So he, like, he
what'd you play?
Left wing.
Oh, okay.
I still play.
Are you left footed?
No, but I'm both. So.
Look at you.
Yeah, yeah.
I was a goalkeeper. So,
really?
Yeah, okay. We might have to have a go at this.
I play
PKs.
Sunday, brother.
Do you?
Yeah.
I'm thinking about starting to play baseball again.
Oh,
though, so
gosh,
I'm very
yeah.
American.
I mean, you can see the size of my arms. I'm not great at baseball. Not that my legs are any bigger.
So you played football in college then?
Well, no. In college, in our college. So, yeah, and then he was super dope. He kind of made me believe in myself and my work and everything. And I started to make films. Like, I did a film for my A-level. I got an A for it. And then I was sick during my exams. I got really sick. And he gave me my predicted grades, like a G, which I didn't think I was giving it a pass exam. And I got like an A, B, and a D. And that was enough to get into where I wanted to go to do film studies in Nottingham Trent.
Okay.
So I went and tried it. I think I went to one lecture.
And so that was university, Nottingham.
Yeah, okay. Nottingham Trent.
And then you live on campus and stuff?
Yeah, I lived on campus. Yeah. And that was a crazy experience. It was dope. You know, I'd lived out of the house since I was like 18 anyway. So I was just like, you know, I'm going to get out of here. And then,
how far is that from Bushy?
4 hours. Three,
oh, okay.
Four
so,
hours.
You're, so you're a ways away.
Yeah, I'm way away.
Yeah.
So I then left college, and I was like, you know what, I want to pursue this passion in music, but I also want to go to LA. I went on a holiday there the year before when I
did
came back.
Did you DJ
from
at all in college?
Yeah, DJed a lot in college.
Yeah, that probably helped with the whole ladies and drugs thing.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I was doing some dope nights there. My brother Lucas, who's still my best friend, he was doing some crazy nights up there. So we did a lot together.
Yeah.
And
so you come to LA on a holiday and it changes the game?
Well, this is before college.
Yeah.
And it changed the game. I remember I fell in love with it. And then I sent off a million emails whilst I was in college. I was like, yeah, I have to go and intern for a record label. I have to go and learn. You know, I know this music game's a business and I know there's some reason why people are doing better than others. And, you know, so I was like, I kind of wanted to learn. And I got an internship at BMG Chrysalis Publishing Company.
And that's in LA?
That's in LA.
Yeah.
And that was just after my college in the summer. And I interned there for 6 weeks.
So you come out here, where do you stay at?
I was staying in UCLA, actually, in the dorms in UCLA, because it was like a program for interns.
Oh,
you
cool.
could stay there, you would pay a small amount of money.
And so you didn't have to worry about like visas and all that stuff?
Oh, just yeah, like, I had a visa. It was a
student? All right,
it was, no, it was like an internship visa.
Oh, sick.
So I was interning for BMG Chrysalis.
And what did you learn there?
I learned that I could make anything happen, because I didn't learn anything business-wise through the publishing side. What I learned is that I was working one day and a friend of mine from my area, from Bushy, it was in a massive band at the time. They like blew up crazy in a big band called Modestep. And I'm shifting through this music, you know, I'm shifting through catalogs and suddenly I'm in the office and I hear them and I'm like, what? This kid is from Bushy. This kid is from my area. And they're playing him in LA. And so that kind of made me was like, you know what? Anything
gotta
is,
make
is
it
possible.
Happen.
Yeah, anything is possible. So I quit. 2 days after that, I was
really?
Like, you know what, I'm not shifting, I'm not doing this no more, I can't do it to myself, it was killing me, I couldn't be creative, so I had 2 weeks left on my visa, and I ended up hustling and meeting someone in a smoking area on my second to last day when I did smoke, and he was like, out of the blue, he's like, I want you to come to my penthouse afterwards. And at home, I pause. So I've gone there.
Yeah.
And this crazy penthouse in the Watermark downtown.
Yeah.
Crazy. He's like, I've got a fashion development company. You know, let's get your paperwork sorted out and like you can come and intern for me.
Yeah, how were you dressing at the time? Like, is he like...
I've always been kind of...
Fashion dude.
Outlandish, yeah. Kind of doing my own thing.
Yeah.
And I think that's why he, you know, approached me. And
well, you're pretty charming and well spoken dude as well. Pause. No,
I was about to say,
no,
I don't want to be attractive.
No, no, no. But you know what I'm saying? Like, I would imagine that, like, meeting you smoking a cigarette, I would have probably ended up in a conversation with you too. Like, what's up?
Yeah,
you seem like a smart fella. So,
yeah, so
that makes sense. So he's like, let's get you working for me.
Yeah.
Right.
And, you know, that kept.
What does he want you to do?
It was kind of like actually scouting girls from across the road to come and work.
That sounds so shady.
Terrible, terrible, terrible.
Yeah.
I'm not going to go into details of that joke because it really fucked me up.
Sounds like pornography.
I wish it were.
Yeah.
But you know, I would be working from 6 in the morning till 10 at night.
Wow.
Go into the studio till 3.
Yeah.
Being up for 5:30. And it was, you know, it was killing me.
So you found a studio to work in on music here too?
Well, yeah. So the first ever dude to really, you know, put me on game and to taught me a lot was this guy called Steven Cigar Hurelia, who was Eminem's engineer, Dr. Dre's engineer. Like, he mixed and mastered 2001. He mixed and mastered M's first two albums.
He's
like
crazy.
An OG.
Yeah.
And I remember the first session I'm in the booth with him. I'm spitting. I'm like, yo, so fucking no, what you talking about, bruv? And then
how long have you been rapping at that point?
And I've been rapping for like solidly for like a year and a half, two years at that point. And I remember he pushed a button. He was like, Danny? I was like, yo. He was like, I can't fucking understand you. Drop the slang and fucking pronunciate. And I remember after that and I was like, yo. You're right. Like, if I want to translate
over here right.
without putting on an accent, I got to fucking, you know, pronunciate. I understand that people aren't going to understand what I'm saying. I've got to, you know, do slang, which is kind of, you know...
Universal.
Yeah. And, you know, he taught me a lot and...
Yeah, because if you start speaking a fucking Cockney rhyme, it's
going to
go over everyone's head here.
Said.
But if you say it's lit... everyone's gonna understand everywhere.
Oh, it's lit.
Yeah, you know, it's lit for sure.
It's for sure lit.
I mean, I taught my grandmother lit. She's like super into it.
It makes sense.
Everything's lit for her now. But anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he tells you like fucking drop
that shit.
Drop the crazy slang. And so that changes the mentality.
Changes everything. And I kind of learned a lot. Then I would start working with, you know, my brother, Jesse, my manager.
Yeah.
He's...
How'd you guys meet?
So when I came back from LA from quitting the BMG,
yeah.
I had someone hit me up on Facebook saying, yo, like, I'm really messing with your stuff. Like, let's get together.
Where were you putting the music out at the time?
I was doing a bit on SoundCloud.
Okay.
You know, that's my main platform at the moment too. But SoundCloud was very new back then.
Right, right.
So I was going to say
it must have just came
exactly.
out.
Exactly. Yeah. It was like I didn't want to put it on YouTube because fucking the hate, it was just disgusting.
Yeah, YouTube was very much of a troll area at the time.
It was just troll. And yeah. I was like, you know what, I'm doing something.
Particularly for white rappers. It was it was tough at a certain point.
White, yeah. English, and Jewish. Yeah, imagine the bullshit I had. So it was kind of the thing where I was like, you know what, I just want it. This is where DJ, that's where I used to listen to all the DJ mix. I was like, let's put a rapper. I feel like I'm not being big-headed. I was the first real rapper to utilize SoundCloud.
Okay.
Like, to be like, I hadn't heard anyone else rapping on SoundCloud.
Uh-huh.
So I was doing all of that, and this dude hit me. He was like, blah, 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 I can get you to labels, I can get you this, that. So I'm fucking eating the carrot, thinking, oh yeah, this is a dude. And
eating the carrot, pause. He's dangling the carrot in front of you.
That's what I meant.
And you're along for the ride. You're like, let's go.
I'm there. Yeah. Let's go.
Yeah.
And he had this little kid hanging around with him, Jesse. And after a few weeks, we were just like, nothing's happening.
Yeah.
So me and Jesse were like, okay, well, fuck this.
You're like, bruv, let's break off.
Yeah. And we did. And we became best friends. You know, I got him an internship at the fashion company.
Okay.
He was the one, you know.
So you guys were scouting girls together?
Yeah.
Swag.
We were, I've lived on his couch for 4 years. You know, his family's my fan. Like, he's just, you know, he's my boy. He's a young boss. He's created a lot of networks. So.
And has he completely moved out here now?
He's been living here. Yeah, he's from
here. Oh, he's from here.
So that's why another reason why I fuck with him too, because, you know, LA is kind of the land of the fake. And when you meet someone from LA, it's like, they're not going to give you that bullshit.
Well, it's interesting because when you actually meet someone that grew up in LA, I feel like they're some of the realists.
No, realists. That's,
you know
what I mean?
Like, when you meet the transplants here, you're like, ah, fuck you.
Can't even chunk.
I always kind of say, like, if someone moves to LA for the wrong reasons, they're going to end up leaving for the right reasons. You know what I mean?
100%.
But yeah, the guys that grow up here, they're great people. There's a real misconception about that.
Yeah, and there's this 3-year rule, too. If you survive past 3 years, then you really kind of understand what's going on.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
So I kind of, you know, Jesse would tell me if something was trash, he would be my no man. He'd be like, it's a trash, it's not going to translate, mm-hmm, I don't like it, this and that. He has a great ear for music.
Mm-hmm. So you guys are learning the game together, kind of. That's a great way to do it, I think.
I think so, yeah, too. So, yeah. You know.
Yeah, and so things start picking up. And then how often are you coming back and forth at this point? Like, how often do you go home and come back?
I'm going every 3 months. I'm only allowed to stay 90 days at a year. So, I mean, 90 days at a time.
Right.
So then I got a visa.
And so where do you go when you go home now? Back to Bushy?
Back to Bushy.
And that's staying with mom?
No, I actually have my own. Well, what, before my paps left and emigrated, he had a small crib there, which he left for me to stay there. So I live with my cousin and another roommate who rents out the room. So, yeah, so it's always when I come home, I got my friends there. It's like super, super vibe.
That's perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. And so, okay, so here was an interesting thing that you told me outside while we were chatting was you did end up putting something on YouTube, and we were talking kind of about the internet one-hit wonders thing, how like sometimes people put out their first thing and it hits and it blows up, and then that's them. They get typecasted as that. Like, you're stuck being that, and it's the modern equivalent of a one-hit wonder, even though maybe it never makes it to the radio.
Yeah.
People are still wanting that thing.
Yeah.
And so you put out a video and it starts going.
Yeah.
And what happens?
So I put out this video, I start going.
What was it called?
It was called Whoop.
Can people still find it? No. Like the audio of it?
Maybe.
Yeah.
It was kind of my first, you know, real music video.
This is 2 years ago? Three?
Three and a half, nearly four.
Yeah.
So we put that out, and you know, it was just me and my friend with a camera. I kind of didn't have the money I wanted to do to film the things that I wanted to film, so this is all I had, and I knew I needed a visual out. Anyway, I ended up blowing up, and it was blowing up like it was like on a, like 100, 150K.
And how fast?
In like a month, it was really
quick.
Blowing up.
That's quick,
so
yeah.
I was just like, you know, I wasn't ready. I wasn't a good enough rapper.
Right.
The video was blowing me up in a way like, oh, he's just some white swag rapper. I knew how easy it was to be typecast and pigeonholed in this day and age of the skipping generation of kids who, you know, gonna watch something they like for your image, and then the next one would come on in 6 months and you'd be forgotten.
Right.
So I took it down. And, you know,
which is a very ballsy maneuver to take it down, because when people get their first taste of success, they don't want to let that go most of the time.
Oh, yeah. And everyone was saying, what are you doing? What are you doing? I was like, you know, if it's meant to be, it will happen again. And, you know, I need to be a better rapper. I need to be, if I'm going to be this, I haven't even done my 10,000 hours yet back then. I was just like, this is, I got to be the best. I'm not coming in to be some joke. This has got to be me.
Right.
So after, you know, reevaluating and going really elusive, I then really utilized SoundCloud. And I only release songs on SoundCloud. And today I've had 4 million plays on my SoundCloud.
That's amazing.
Like, I only release a song every 6 months. Like, I just to be like, are you with me? Do you want to hear what I'm saying rather than see what I'm saying?
Right.
And then when I could afford the visual of my dreams and how I'd embraced it, I then, you know, started meeting people who are in my circle and like-minded, and yeah, and then I made this latest visual.
I think the releasing songs every 6 months and things like that are very smart in the modern day and age too, because it's kind of against trend where everybody wants to release something every week, so you're just on the blog rotation constantly. But the thing is that you can only maintain that for so long before you burn out for 100%. A little bit. And so if you can get your early supporters to realize that, like, look, we're all on my timeline and my creativity cycle, and you can get them to come along for that, then you can make lifelong fans who are going to wait for you and aren't just going to burn out when, like, the blogs stop fucking with you. Because eventually blogs stop fucking with
100%.
Everybody.
100%.
You know what I mean? Yeah. And so I think that was very wise beyond your years. Good job, young man.
Thank you very
much. Yeah, absolutely. And so when do you finally decide to put another video out after the Whoop thing?
When I had seen what was out there, I had started becoming enlightened to this world of real amazing visuals. Like, feel like I studied film study, but I didn't know how to incorporate it into music. I didn't have the access to, you know, Reds or Alexa cameras,
right,
or crews or you know, CGI and stuff like this. And along the journey of the past year, I had met, you know, some crazy people, some great creatives, and I had this idea, you know. My album, the track list is 3 sentences. So the song I Arise Because, the song before it is How I Dream, I Arise Because, Time Is of the Essence. So it was meant to be a 3-piece trilogy.
Right.
And yeah, I met the directors. I was like, yo, this is kind of what I want to do. I want to glorify rap music videos, you know, with the cars and the bitches, but do it in a way that hasn't been done, you know, using drones, like using them in a way that, you know, where we've got a story to tell. The White Forest in the middle is, you know, it's symbolic, but it's also like, where is that from?
Right.
What is that to do with? Why is he there? You know, these are all questions I wanted to leave open. So in the bigger scheme of things, I can really make movies.
Yeah. You're just wrapping up a project now, yeah?
I am. 3 years later, I've been working on this.
I take my time and I go slow too. And so I think that, man, taking fucking 3 years, there's nothing wrong with that. Because it's a marathon. It's not a sprint, man.
Amen. That's
and if
exactly
you want to do, if you want to be able to do it into your 30s or 40s like Jay-Z, then you got to fucking take your time.
Amen.
You know what I mean?
Couldn't agree more.
Yeah. You talked about earlier when you're in college, like, going in and fucking lots of girls and et cetera, et cetera. Have you ever settled down and found love in your 24 years?
I wouldn't say love.
No love yet.
I don't. Do you know what? I don't know, because it's not love, but I was seeing someone before things got really serious in the music about a year and a half, 2 years ago. And I realized that, you know, I think about it every day, not her, but what my life is about to be, you know. I was in a situation where I was like, yo, I like you, but, like, I'm going to be going on tour and I am going to be having sex with women. It's nothing to hurt you.
That's just nature of the beast.
That's just how the game is. And the second she said to me, I'm okay with that, I knew it was killing her deep down and I had to stop. And I spoke with a girlfriend of mine who was just like, if a girl is going to turn around and say to you, they're okay with you having sex with another girl, that is not the girl for you. Mm. You need a girl who's going to say, are you fucking serious? Who the fuck do you think I am? Fuck you. What the fuck? So, you know, I've yet to come across someone like that. And, you know, I do get worried. I do want a family and kids, you know, when I'm older. But right now, I have to concentrate on making money for them to live when I need to. And, you know, I think because I've lived in LA, you know, on and off for 5 years, I can tell when someone's trying to fuck with me for who I am or what I do, this and that. You know, I've been independent my whole life with everything I do. I kind of can see who's trying to use me or this and that. And, you know, I don't want to find a wife in LA.
This is a hard place to find a wife.
It's a hard place to find a wife. So
very difficult, indeed. Yeah. Yes. So, yeah, what's next? Are we kind of the beginning of the press cycle for this project? Is that what this ended up being?
We're doing all our own press. So thank you for.
No, I'm excited. This was very serendipitous because the backstory behind this, how this happened was, as you guys know that listen, I bartend on the weekends to make extra scratch so that I don't have to maintain a regular job.
Yep.
I've seen your videos and I've heard the music and I know that you come to ham parties sometimes, and so I see this little wiry fellow walk up and I'm like, I think that's Danny Seth, and then I hear British accent and I'm like, that is Danny Seth. But I was like, I didn't say anything because it was hella loud and I didn't want, and it's kind of hard approaching people about a podcast when you're bartending. It seems kind of weird. And so the next day I just tweeted and I was like, yo man, I fucking saw you last night, like what's up, I have this show, and then it managed to work itself out.
It did.
And so it's fun how that happens, and that's why I really love LA, because you can just run into people.
Exactly.
So what's next? I don't know where you, how often next. Are you in the studio? When do you leave?
I'm here for a bit. I think I'm going to have my release party at 424 in a couple of weeks. So obviously come down.
Yeah.
And anyone who's listening, maybe you might want to pop down. I think we're deciding a date now. But, you know, I keep pushing back the date because I feel...
Perfectionist
and I can't risk it going under the radar.
Right.
I can't. Everything needs to be right. Everything needs to kind of...
Do you think any of it, and this might be me projecting, but do you ever think that some of that stuff, because I think my producer has this, is like a slight fear of success?
I believe so, yeah.
It's scary to think this could work. Sometimes you hear, like, man, I remember hearing this song that I made a few years back and like listening to it. I like randomly smoke some weed and I never do. I'm driving around and I listen to it and I go, oh, fuck, man, my life's going to change. And it was like kind of frightening.
It is frightening. Yeah. And you know what's more frightening? I've been in a friendship circle when I've seen success all around me the past few years.
Right.
And, you know, I get to experience it firsthand without happening to me. And as much as I say I want it, which I do want it, and I do want to make a living doing this because it's what I love, it's my passion,
right.
You know, I'm blessed to even be where I am right now. But I think I just need to man up. It's not more the fear of success, it's more the fear of, I hope the kids want to hear stories, because you know, in this day and age, it's so easy to, you know, hear the most ignorant shit in the world, and you know, it's popping and I love it. God, I love it. I'm not gonna say I don't, but you know, I love to hear where they came from, what your story is, you know, how, you know, it's all well listening to an interview, but I need to hear that through the music. And I think that's what I've been, you know, the album's 17 tracks. I didn't want to cut any off because it's like, this is the past 3 years, you know, the video, whatever happened with that, you know, my struggle, you know, being accepted back home and coming over here, you know, it's a fucking story. And I just hope that, you know,
that people are willing to listen.
Exactly.
Well, and it can be very frightening also to open up that way and to be, you know, to make something so intimate and also to be vulnerable. You know what I mean? And I feel like from the brief conversations we've had, it sounds like you've got a little bit of vulnerability on the new record, right?
For sure,
you put the life out there.
No, for sure. I mean, the song I'm going to play is the story between the final letter between me and my old stepmother, who was like a mother to me. When my dad divorced her, she cut me off and she said to me, you know, I was in LA and I was sending her letters. I was sending like 10 letters at a time. And finally I got, you know, a voicemail saying, what's your address? I want to write back to you. And my letter to her was just like, you know, I love you and I miss you. I just want to see you. It's all I want to do is just see you and hope you're all right, because I know she wasn't well.
Mm-hmm.
And then her letter back to me was like, I love you so much, but I can never see you again because you remind me of your father.
Oh my gosh.
So this was like nearly 4 years ago. I haven't seen her. So yes, she was like my mother. You know, I would not, you know, I would never have money if it wasn't for her. She wouldn't, she put food on my table. She put me into, you know, private education. She made me the person who I was. And then when, you know, when this all happened and my dad moved away and then I lost my stepmom, it was kind of like, you know, even though my mother, that's my rock, that's my angel. But, you know, the relationship between me and my stepmother, you know, this song is very real. This is my stand. This is me bearing my soul to the world. Like, yo, I can make turn up ignorant bands, but, you know, I like to make music. And this is stuff that's happened to me.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And that's yeah. terrifying to put that out in the world, but it feels yeah. so good when you put it out and yeah, people react to
for
it.
For sure.
And I have a feeling that I think that our following is going to like it. So I'm excited to see the reaction, and I'm excited for you to see the reaction.
Thank
so,
yeah, thank you.
Yeah, man, I appreciate you coming in. Before we wrap it up, let's tell everybody where to find you online.
Okay. Well, my Twitter is at Danny Seth.
DANNYSETH. Just how you would think.
My website is DannySeth.xxx, like a porn site.
Swag. SoundCloud?
SoundCloud is / Danny Seth.
Mm-hmm.
My Instagram is actually Gallery de Seth, French for Gallery of Seth. So GALLERIEDESETH.
And then if you're like on YouTube and want to see videos, you can just search Danny Seth and he pops right up. You got a pretty Googleable name.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, so you're good. If you guys are looking for Danny Seth, Google that shit and you will find him. I appreciate it, man.
Thank you for having me. I was really dope.
Yeah, this was dope. My name is Lee. You guys might know me as Intuition, and you can follow me at It's Intuition. You can follow my man behind the boards making the shit sound buttery, Ben Shim, at I Am Database, space with two S's. Follow us as a unit at Kinda Neat, youtube.com/thatskindaneat, where you're going to see Danny Seth perform. What song is it called?
It's called Danny Darling.
It's called Danny Darling, and you can follow up on all of our other videos. We just hit 7 million views, which is crazy. 36,000 subscribers. We're getting close to 40. Thank you. I appreciate it. It's been a lot of hard work, and it's paying off. So thank you guys for always tuning into that. Facebook.com/kindaneat, and make sure you download the podcast app. Search for Kinda Neat and subscribe.
Subscribe, bro.
Leave a 5-star rating and a comment about who you want to see on the show, and tell me how handsome I am. With that being said, I think that's it, man. You got anything else you want to add?
The British are coming.
The British are coming. Pause. I'm Intuition. That was Danny Seth, and this was definitely kind of neat. Thank you, guys.